Virginia and New Jersey have their say. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
I'm Chris Starwalt.
And this is Perino and Starwalt.
I'll tell you what.
And we're together in
again,
person.
Again, for the very first time. Like Martin and Lewis.
Oh, who's that?
Wait, really? Martin and Lewis.
No, I don't know.
Dean Martin and Jerry
Lewis. Oh. I never knew that that's what they said.
Are you more Martin or Lewis?
What do you think?
You're Martin.
Okay.
Obviously.
Obviously.
Lewis. I mean, come on.
Obviously.
You know, he was from Steubenville, Ohio, and he had his first Dean Martin, whose real name escapes me right now, was a teddy boy, a handsome guy, like to hang out in the illegal casinos of my hometown. My hometown of Wheeling, West Virginia, was a vice capital of before the Rust Belt was the Rust Belt. Wheeling was – there was a guy named Big Bill Lias. It was an open town. No mob controlled it specifically, but Big Bill Lias ran the city, and it had houses of ill repute. It had gambling, and it had all this stuff. As long as the city father said the old Protestant line, as long as it stayed south of Big Wheeling Creek, you could run anything you wanted, and they did. And there's a great picture. One of my favorite pictures is a squad car rolling through an alley intersection, and there are a bunch of courtesans, ladies hanging out from the windows of this brothel waving at the cop car, and you see the hand of the police officer waving up to the ladies.
So when did that end?
When the region went broke. Everything changed for America in the 1970s in a big way. Things started to vice became – we talked about this before, how we now have a mix of incredible vice but also censoriousness. And the idea that you would have a part of town that was, you know, where you went for – that certain things happened in a certain part of town, and we would hypocritically – turn a blind eye to it south of the creek, and that north of the creek we would carry on in our blue-nosed ways. There were problems with that, and it was intellectually dishonest, but it did have virtue in its own way. Now it's like either everything is full-blown hedonism or full censoriousness, and it's not exactly as good of a fit.
Interesting. So there was an election yesterday.
True fact.
How did you feel about the new lineup for the Fox News election night?
Oh, our new technology?
Yeah.
I am sort of bubbling with enthusiasm about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to restrain myself because we're just getting started.
Okay.
But boy, if this thing is as good as I think it is, if it works as well as I think it will, we are going to be in high cotton. I mean, we have so much more data. We know so much more about voters, and I think we're going to be able to make calls really early. I'm super excited about.
So how are you changing?
So I will not bore the internet endlessly, okay. but I will say basically this.
Or like, what did you think wasn't good enough before?
Well,
like, what did you want to fix?
I didn't even know. So Arnon Mishkin, mm-hmm. who is he is the Obi-Wan of data nerddom,
mm-hmm.
And the Jedi Master thereof. He basically figured out a way, he and his team figured out a way to merge real poll data with telephone data, with voter files, and with online surveys that people complete. And we're partnering with the University of Chicago. And you end up with such an enormous cache of data, so many thousands of interviews. Now, we wouldn't use an online poll to do a survey before an election because there's a lot of problems with online polling versus telephone polls and all that stuff. But to have the voter file and all of the data from these surveys, that means that when we start to introduce real vote count into this computer model, we have so much more to draw from. We can tell you so much more about how precincts, how neighborhoods, what's happening on the very granular level. Not only does that make it more predictive, but – and that we can make calls earlier and crush the competition beneath our heel. But also because we can know more about the voters and why they're voting and how they're voting and and also important in this, why they're not voting. Because of this technology, we're able to find out who's not voting and maybe why. Why didn't you go vote in this election? You went and voted 4 years ago. Why aren't you voting this time?
So yesterday there was big turnout all across the board for an off-year election. Were you surprised?
I was surprised by how intense. I wrote in Halftime Report today, there's a lot of stupidity going on about the Virginia election. Ed Gillespie should have been Trumpier. Ed Gillespie should have been less Trumpy. Ed Gillespie should have been Trumpy, but with a soupçon of Ben Sasse and a 13% granular dusting of economic populism. And it's like, guys, seriously, my last line was, the best way to ride a wave is on your own surfboard. The Democrats are pumped up. They are turning out. Gillespie, I'll put it a different way. If you would have told Ed Gillespie 6 months ago, here are your raw vote totals for every county in every region, here are the number of votes that you got, he would have said, I've won. We did it. Mm-hmm. Look at how well I did. Mm-hmm. Look at how many more votes I got.
Yeah, he had 120,000 more votes yesterday than in 2014 when he ran for the Senate.
Right. And he did way better than Ken Cuccinelli. So Ken Cuccinelli lost. Ken Cuccinelli, who's quite Trumpy, he lost in 2013 by 2.5 points against Terry McAuliffe.
Yep.
Ed Gillespie got 15,000 more votes than Cuccinelli did in Northern Virginia. And in the rest of Virginia, he got – I could look it up – but more than 100,000 more votes. So it should have been more than enough. It mm-hmm. should have been more than enough to get him there.
But why wasn't it?
Because Northam got 10 times more new votes in Northern Virginia – more than 10 times more votes in Northern Virginia – new votes in Northern Virginia than Gillespie did. And in the rest of the state, he also got more new votes than compared to McAuliffe and Cuccinelli. The Democrats surged. And you see it not just there. Obamacare expansion in Maine, the state Senate in Washington, in the Virginia House of Delegates. Great example. How Trumpy is your Trump and is Gillespie too Trump or not enough Trump? Trumpy candidate, the rain falleth on the Trumpy and the untrumpy in the Virginia House of Delegates. It was just a wipeout. It just didn't matter. It was just a wipeout for Republicans. Because not because Republican intensity is down, but because Democratic intensity mm-hmm. is through the roof. Mm-hmm. They hate Trump. They hate the Republicans. They're furious about what happened in 2016. When you look at the change among women with college degrees – between how they voted in 2016 and how they voted yesterday in Virginia, you can see that there are some chickens coming home to roost.
But do you think that Virginia and New Jersey just wouldn't have – like, you know, there's an argument from people who want to defend the president that New Jersey and Virginia aren't good examples anyway because they weren't Trump states and
– Well, then Alabama's not a good example either. And nothing's a good example because you can always you can nitpick anything you want. But I'll tell you what, if you look at – oh, I said it. If you look at election returns since a year ago, mm-hmm. and these are in the special elections. This is in the election – these are in the elections that we had yesterday. Democratic turnout is up even when they're losing.
Yeah.
They're up. They want it. They're hungry. Republicans hate each other. They devote – I've never seen –
So did the new Fox News voter analysis – tell you why Republicans didn't turn out enough? Or are there just not enough Republicans in Virginia to have matched that Democratic enthusiasm?
There are not enough. So in a base versus base election, last time right. the Republicans had a really good year in Virginia was when Bob McDonnell won in 2009. And what happened was the northern suburbs broke for him and he got a lot of independent votes. There's a ton of independent votes in the suburbs. So yes. In an abstract way, you could say that there are a lot of votes available to Republicans that they did not get this time. But that's not what politics are anymore. The Democrats embraced under Barack Obama, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton had a model that said, I got to keep my base happy, but I got to take out of the middle. I got to take these voters out of the middle. I have to have broad appeal. Obama and Bush in 2004 migrated a little bit away from that. But Obama in 08 and 12 said, I don't care about the middle. That's where you get run over. I'm going to do a base versus base election. I'm going to turn out my people and we're going to beat your people. Base versus base election.
Yeah.
And the modern tribal warfare of campaigns is, can I keep my people angrier? Can I keep my people more fired up? Are they more – do they hate you more so that they will go vote no matter what? This is a reflection of the fact that nobody is making positive arguments, right? Nobody says, I will take us to a bridge to the 21st century. Now it's like, I will quench your thirst with a cup of liberal tears or I will make I will shoot Donald Trump out of a cannon into the sun. And it's just like, no wonder you end up here.
Do you think that Gillespie in the primary, when he almost lost to Corey Stewart, you know, that was a real wake up call about the base?
Look, I don't think any. I think the Republicans could have run the ghost of Ronald Reagan,
okay,
and lost in Virginia. I don't think. Okay. I think Ed Gillespie made some unfortunate choices. I think that his ad that he ran about child molesters was unconscionable and not something that I would have expected.
And they ran it a lot.
Constantly.
And I have a question about that. Like, why do that in Northern Virginia?
Because that's how you scare people.
But there's not that – those types of voters aren't there, right?
Sure they are. People, as it turns out, pedophilia, unpopular in most precincts.
Gotcha.
Not a lot of pockets of support.
We got that out of our new Fox News voter analysis.
And that's why he ran the ads that looked like a horror movie about MS-13 mm-hmm. in Northern Virginia. It's all about scare people, mm-hmm. frighten them enough. And so every campaign does it a little bit. You touch it a little bit. You're like – the mm-hmm. Obama ad about Mitt Romney and the empty desk, his closing argument ad, basically like, mm-hmm. Mitt Romney will eat your liver. So everybody does that, the scare stuff a little bit. But Gillespie had two big, like, woof, and they were in heavy rotation. I'm sure that hurt him with persuadable voters in the suburbs. But what I'm saying is it didn't matter. He was going to lose. Yeah. They could have nominated anybody, and the Democrats were just going to win.
Interesting, though, is that from what I know, like the campaign really thought that it was going to win on the Republican side.
Really?
Yes. Well, I don't think they were lying to me.
Why would they think that? That doesn't
I'm
make sense.
I'm telling you.
So just because – so here – speaking of, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of sassafras out there. It's 2016. So look. I have spent my professional life analyzing polls and, more importantly, looking at historical data about politics. This is what I like to do because I'm a weird person. I think it tells us the story of America. I think it tells us about our future. I think it talks about our past. I think it's all very enlightening, and it's just fun to see these numbers move in the charts and all that stuff. I have heard from people for a year. The election was a year ago today. Your polls are wrong, poll, blah, 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 blah. And I say, well, actually, sir, interestingly enough, the national polls were quite accurate in 2016, even more accurate than they were in 2012. There were three weak spots in the map for polling. As it turns out, those were the states that by a very narrow margin flipped from blue to red. And we've talked about how If I know that Steubenville, Ohio, is north of Wheeling, West Virginia, if I know that's true and I see it on a map and it says that that's true and it confirms everything that I believe, I'm probably not going to go test the assumption. And we saw polls that reflected the assumption of everything that we'd had in those three states, in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. We said, okay, must be true. We didn't do follow-up polls. We didn't bombard it. In Virginia, it was polled constantly. I mean, overwhelming numbers of constant polls. And by the way, kudos to Quinnipiac University that nailed it right to the point. Their pre-election poll, we came in at lead for five for Northam. Quinnipiac had it at nine. It was 8.9. There was no reason to think that Gillespie was going to win except for a belief, and sometimes this happens. The race is closing. The polls aren't catching it at the close, and there's momentum. But I didn't see anything like that. But I had a bunch of people tell me. They're like, oh, Gillespie's going to win. I say, why? Polls were wrong in 2016.
Gut instinct.
Polls were wrong in 2016. Must be true.
What about that Northam, you know, he's a pretty conservative Democrat.
They both voted for George W. Bush in 2004.
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they both said they voted for him twice.
Did they both vote for him twice?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I'm assuming Ed Gillespie voted for him twice, and I know Northam did because he said so.
Did anybody ask Gillespie about 2000? We're not sure.
And then this time, Northam, we've been hearing that the party's moving so far left, the Democrats.
Yeah, yeah.
That they love Bernie. And, you know, Donna Brazile's book says the DNC had rigged it. It was really – it should have been more fair to Bernie and let him have a fighting chance because he might have beaten her. She doesn't weigh in on whether he should have, but
right.
That it was unfair. And then you have Northam, who's pretty much like, I don't know, Bill Clinton of the early 90s.
Yeah.
As a conservative Democrat, and he won working whites.
He did.
And did a lot better than Hillary Clinton did. So what do you think that's about?
I think that in Virginia, so a state like Tennessee, very Republican, right? Well, sometimes they have Democratic governors. A state like North Carolina, very Republican, right? Well, not really. When you really get right down to it and you go down to the rivets, they're on the state level especially. They'll go back and forth. They'll take different individuals. Partisanship, so everything is national now, and we know that.
Yeah.
We talk about how every issue is nationalized and all those things. That's true, comma, except. And the except is this. On state races in the state house, generally people don't like extremes. In their state legislature, generally they don't like extremes. Generally they go for the sort of the tapioca or the vanilla. I like tapioca.
I can't stand tapioca.
Really?
Ugh. It's like fish eyes.
Do you like rice pudding?
Nope.
Nothing? Is it just the consistency?
Yeah. I think so. I don't like it.
I like rice pudding. I like it a lot.
I like vanilla pudding.
I like vanilla pudding.
I like banana pudding.
I do like banana pudding. I like chocolate pudding. If you make it the real kind, it has the skin on it.
Ew.
Oh, you don't like the pudding skin?
What is that? What are you
talking
about?
Aaron, back me up on this. Bonewald. So pudding skin is when you cook the pudding. This is you can't
Who
use
cooks the, it? You just put it in the refrigerator.
You can't do the instant kind. When you cook the pudding and it sets, there is forms on top of the pudding a skin.
Oh, like a creme brulee thing.
Yeah, but like this is like a hillbilly brulee, and it's on top of the pudding. And then if you peel it off, oh, that's good.
Oh, do you eat it?
What do you think? I don't wear it as a yarmulke. Yeah,
no
I eat it.
No way. Nope. So I never made pudding like that.
You never cooked pudding?
No. No, all you do is you get the box.
Right.
With the powder.
Right. And you put it in the hot water.
Throw in some milk.
Right.
And whatever. And then you don't cook it. It's instant. All you do is you swirl it around with a spoon and then you put it in the refrigerator and a couple hours later you've got pudding.
Can I ask you how the cheese I sent you was?
I'm saving it for Thanksgiving.
You're saving it for Thanksgiving?
Yes.
I'm disappointed.
Why? I have guests coming. I want to give them good...
I want to hear about the cheese. I'm so excited.
You will. You'll hear about it. How do you know this place, Murray's?
Because I know about cheese and meat and where to obtain them. And I'm really excited about it. It's like I sort of agonized over – because I had to remember I was buying for you and Peter, not for myself. And so I would look at something and be like, oh, I'm going to get that. And I'd be like, whoa, Chris, that's you're not shopping for yourself here. You're shopping for normal people who eat normal things and are of average size.
Average? I'm offended. I work so hard to starve myself.
And by the way, I'm looking at your Think Thin, High Protein, and Fiber Bar, and it's the best looking one of these I've ever seen because it's milk chocolate and toffee almond.
Yeah, and it's unopened.
I'm super excited about it. Why?
I hate bars.
But that probably not that bad.
I know.
It's better. It's better than the pterodactyl doo-doo that she had for you last time.
Yeah, that's true.
Aaron.
Aaron Landers. New Jersey. You want to talk about New Jersey?
Whatever. I mean,
Republicans have nothing there now. Did you see that I can't remember who it was. I think the leader of the state senate or something said the first order of business in January will be raising taxes.
Sure. Well, let's
great.
Let's also remember the Republicans. Chris Christie was an anomaly.
Right. He wasn't going to win. Remember?
Right.
Yeah, everybody was so surprised, and then he won, and then he became very popular,
and then he was the opposite of that. Basically, this there's no so the Northeast United States has a surprising number of Republican governors, Republican
that do very well and are very popular.
That do quite well and are very popular.
Charlie Baker,
and the governor of Vermont is also a Republican, and I don't know who else. Paul LePage, who's not popular. But is in fact a Republican, and he is the governor of Maine. But I guess my point is, just as I was saying about the Mid-South, you can be a successful governor in the Northeast as a Republican, just like you can be a Democratic governor in the Mid-South. You just have to be right for your state.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately the problem with Chris Christie and the reason that the New Jersey Republicans will be in exile for a period of time is that Chris Christie said that he would fight for you. He would fight for the little guy.
Instead of just fight?
Instead of just fighting for himself. And in the end, the Republicans have to pay attention to Trump about this issue because Trump and Christie are a lot alike.
Yeah.
Because it's like, ooh, I can't believe he said that. And then they go, I'm glad he did, frankly. I was hoping somebody would say that to somebody, and it's about time, and I'm glad he did. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, that's fine unless it becomes tedious, becomes tiresome, and it seems like it's selfish. And in Christie's case, and it was a fitting end to his tenure that he will always be remembered for the guy who shut down all of the public beaches in New Jersey and then took his family to the private beach house of the governor. And that picture of him sitting on the empty beach will be a fitting remembrance of Chris Christie's tenure. And by the way, a road sign for Donald Trump and for every politician, which is when you make it about you, the people hate you for it. Mm. They absolutely hate you for it.
Mm. So then can you – I don't want to overinterpret yesterday about as to how it portends for the midterms in 2018. But since this is a podcast and it's like who's listening?
Right, exactly. Aaron's mom. That's it.
Can we – so what do you think it means? What do you think? Like they're going to scramble and then between – it's going to be just – they're going to try to calibrate against Trump rather than just being like what they're for.
Well, right. Right.
And maybe they like a lot of the things. Like if you're a conservative, if you just put on paper some of the things that President Trump has done, but you don't know the name of it, right? And you're like, would you like these things on this piece of paper as a conservative? Would you like these things?
Right.
And you look down the list like, love these things.
Right.
Love the judges.
Right.
Love the deregulation.
Right.
Love the tax reform. If they
yeah, right. I guess I would say
love the fighting against ISIS. Love
everybody
all,
likes killing ISIS.
Like, love all that. Then if you can be for the policies, can you win?
Yeah, I don't think that's the way that works. I think this. I think Republicans have to accept the fact that they're going to be in a hostile climate. Now, something could change. Any number of things could change, but the economy's good.
Yeah.
Joblessness is low. The country is basically at peace. This is the times are good. Sorry, America. Everybody wants to complain about how things are. Things are pretty good.
Right.
And the president's still unpopular and Republicans are still unpopular. Mm-hmm. There is not a sense of, oh, gosh, I'm glad the Republicans are in charge. And in fact, Democrats lead Republicans by wide margins in what we call generic ballot, which no ballot is really generic ultimately, but they continue to lead by these wide margins. The takeaway is this. It's going to be a difficult climate. In almost every expectation I have for next year, it's going to be a very difficult climate. I bet you if they'd had the election today, the Republicans would have lost the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. If they'd have been voting nationwide yesterday instead of just in a handful of places, I'm sure that it would have been a bad wipeout for the Republicans and they'd have lost the House. The mythology that is forming in Washington, and it is interesting how quickly a thing goes from a notion, a bauble being batted around to the received mosaic law of politics. We've got to repeal Obamacare and pass a tax cut or we will lose next year. And I say, well, Obamacare is really popular now. Did you know that? No, we have to do it or the base will be angry. Well, the base is angry and they hate you anyway.
I saw a quote from a woman. She's a Northeast Republican congresswoman. I can't remember her name. But she said about the tax bill, she said that her donors are calling
I
her
saw that.
And saying, don't bother calling us again if this bill doesn't
we don't
pass.
Get that. You better put
I'm
this.
Like, well, what is she supposed to do? So her donors want it, but her constituents are saying no.
Donors want it. Voters don't.
So what does somebody do? I think you do what the voters want.
Well, I think.
Or you do whatever is right. You represent them.
Yeah, you represent your voters. And here's the tricky bit. The people don't want Obamacare repealed particularly. They would like it to be saved and fixed somehow, and it's falling apart and everything, and it's all getting worse on that on the insurance side. And they're going to try to fix it at the end of the year, but it's all sort of shabby. And then on the tax side, here's the problem. It's pretty simple. The Republican orthodoxy – remember when Grover Norquist with his pledge and he would run around and he had – you signed the pledge. You said sign the pledge. What did the pledge say? I will never raise taxes on anybody.
Ever.
Ever, no matter what.
Yeah, and actually, so then the Republicans keep getting themselves wrapped around the axle on this because I just saw on Laura Ingraham's show,
even after
a week of this discussion of the tax bill, which shows that clearly some people are going to have to pay more, and maybe
they're raising taxes on people.
But he says, let's be clear, everybody is going to pay less in taxes. I'm like, that's not holding up.
It's not true. And Republicans who for 30 years developed this absolute austere orthodoxy, no deviations, which is you never raise taxes, anybody's taxes. Don't do it. And the Republicans are like, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And that was good, but we're going to raise people's taxes.
But the other thing that, that Republicans have done is we have said there are lots of people who on the low income scale, they shouldn't have to pay. OK, so we're going to leave them alone. So there's a smaller base with which to work. And if they want to say that it's fine for millionaires to have to pay more, I mean, that's their bend. But they can't pretend that that's not different.
I would have loved to have seen what would have happened. We talked about this about Obamacare. And they're repeating the same mistakes on Obamacare. They said success or failure on the replacement for Obamacare will be determined by how many people have insurance. I was like, but bro, you know that if you eliminate free insurance, people will have less insurance. That's got to be kind of your point. Like that, you have to build that into part of your objective. They're doing the same thing here where they're starting out. No rich people are going to pay any less. And it's like, well, I thought you were the tax cut people. I would have loved on healthcare to have seen them come out with a bold proposal, even if it failed, and say, this is our vision.
Right.
This is really what I wanted to do. And vouchers or—
That's true. I was going to ask Larry Lindsay that today, that if you have a once-in-a-generation chance to reform taxes, is this how you do it?
And on this one, I would have loved to, for them to have come out and to shock and consternation of the world and say, here's what we're going to do on taxes. We're going to have three rates. If you make less than 50 grand, you ain't paying any taxes at all. And then we're going to step it up in three rates from there, no deductions at all. No mortgage deduction, no nothing.
Right.
And everybody's rates are coming down. And it's going to be like this.
Well, I guess we have to give them a chance, right? Obviously. They haven't even passed the bill out of markup yet in the committee. And then,
it ain't going it. And trust me when I tell you, it ain't going in that direction.
Well, but the Senate will come out with their bill, which, as I understand, is going to be significantly different.
Yes. The Senate is circling around. They're a hawk circling the sky.
Right.
Look, there's an injured rabbit twitching out in the middle of the field, and the hawk is like, just like Susan Collins is like, oh, it's going to be so delicious when I swoop down.
And get it.
And
so
get it.
Maybe they'll figure something out, but man. Matt Labash wrote a piece called Kill the Bill.
It was great.
It was a piece that I thought, wow. If you're unafraid, that's the piece you write.
Well, so here's the thing. If you believe in conservative principles at your core, you say don't raise people's taxes,
mm-hmm.
and it's fairly simple. We have, as Orwell taught us, to control the language is to control everything. When language become, and by the way, I'm really excited. I just ordered. I'm going to read the new Tom Wolfe book about language.
Oh, okay. Can you give us a synopsis?
I will. But controlling the language. What does it mean to be conservative? What does it mean to be liberal? What does it mean to be right wing, left wing, all of these things? The terminology has gotten so muddied up.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a conservative is supposed to mean that you want taxation to be determined by the ability of the people or by the need of the government, not the ability of the people
to pay. Right.
And that's where.
That's why I know. And I know a lot of people that are friends of ours on the Hill listen to this podcast, and we are with you.
Speak for yourself. I'm with nobody. I am with no party, no person. I hope the all best things for the country. But I got to tell you, this looks like busy work, and this looks like they're running around trying to look like they're doing something for the sake of doing it. The economy is growing at a nice clip. Joblessness is at.
What do you think Trump was trying to do? Was he sincere in trying to get Democrats on board when he called from China into the Democrat meeting the other day? I think he probably was.
Sure.
Or. Was that just to say, well, we tried. We reached out.
I'm sure he would. I'm sure. Look, he really likes Joe Manchin. He really
likes.
And
Heidi Heitkamp.
And he likes Heidi Heitkamp. I assume he likes Donnelly okay, though Pence, since he's from Indiana, is probably like, back off. We got to have, you know, I'm sure Pence doesn't want that happening in Indiana. But man, look, Donald Trump would love to be loved by everybody.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of that.
Hit me.
Manchin. Did you hear that Susan Collins and Joe Manchin are going to co-chair the No Labels effort?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that? I've never asked you what you feel about No Labels.
Hate is a strong word that I don't use because it's the wrong word to use. But it's a phony. It's junkie.
But why would he do it?
Because he's trying to get reelected. I mean, oh. I cannot look into his heart.
No labels.
I have known Joe Manchin for a long time. I do not know what is in his heart on this, but I would say that looking from the outside, it's good politics in a year when your party's brand. If you look at the counties in Virginia that are closest to West Virginia and how they voted, Trump gonna Trump de la Trump Trump Trump. They're Republican and real Republican. So Manchin is running in a state that is like that, and it's hard. Now he can do really well, but the ways in which he can distance himself from.
But he's not beholden to the Democrats necessarily. Like, he could vote for tax reform.
And he might.
I think he probably will.
I don't know about that, but he might. And certainly he will say.
And I think Susan Collins may not.
The Senate plan will be one that has her support, I imagine.
Oh, okay. Oh, do you know something? Well, you said that like you knew something.
Well, I want to construct it the right way. This is.
What do you know? Nobody's listening to this.
I'm not spilling because I don't want Aaron's mom to blab.
No one's listening.
But it's like this. They're not going to put forward legislation. Mitch McConnell is not going to put forward legislation that's not going to pass.
They can't get them. Okay.
They're not doing that.
Well, all right.
But on the final deal, could I see Manchin coming over Heitkamp,
yeah.
Donnelly? Sure.
What do they have to lose?
Their seats.
No, like, that's what I mean. No, right. But if they don't vote for it.
Right, exactly. And the other thing that may happen, and this I don't want to get too far down the procedural pipe. Here's what I suspect will occur. House Republicans will gag out this bill. Here's this tax bill. Unloved will occur. And then the Senate will have its bill, which will basically be a mean RSVP. No, I cannot attend because your party stinks. And then they'll put that out, and then they'll realize that they're sort of at impasse. And then I think this conversation sort of goes – I think Thanksgiving – we'll get past Thanksgiving, and it'll sort of drift.
Well, you know why it'll drift?
Because they got to do everything else.
They got to pass the bill. So that's the other thing is that you're going to have all these Republicans have to vote to increase the debt limit.
Yep.
By December 8th.
Yep. And they wouldn't cut spend – or not, they wouldn't.
Was it the debt limit vote or the omnibus?
Well, they got to do it all. They got DACA, the Dreamers.
And, but didn't the president say, don't worry – you know, we can push this off till March. He did say that.
He says a lot of things, to be fair.
To be fair.
To be fair. And the whole thing now is you got that. All the lines start to intersect. You can't take clean shots anymore because this one impinges on this one, which impinges on that one, which I don't. You know what I just realized? Hmm. I just looked at the clock. Was I supposed to do mailbag?
Oh.
Neither of us did mailbag.
This schedule's killing me.
And
I can't keep up.
And it's the
I haven't read a book in a long time. You know what I am reading though?
What?
We'll do our own mag. Dana, okay. Mailbag. Dana, what are you reading?
Dear Dana.
Well, actually, I picked up and I interviewed Chris Scalia.
Oh, cool.
And he put it together along with Ed Whelan a book of speeches from the late Justice Antonin Scalia. It is fantastic.
I bet.
And because I'm able to go to bed earlier like I used to, and also my schedule is just so different now.
Living it up.
I can read a speech a night.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, what a writer.
Yeah, he was really amazing.
And a thinker. I just love this collection. It's really good.
And an amazing intellect. And I think the great testament to Scalia is the degree to which his ideological adversaries respected his thinking and his writing and him. And that it was – that it was rooted in a sincere construction and that it was thoughtful. And I think the best that we can do in any political discourse is to be thoughtful and really think things through. And Scalia was funny and he was flip sometimes and he was, you know, he could be a little caustic, but it was all from a thoughtful place. It was all from a considered view.
Yeah. So I recommend that's a good Christmas gift for people.
There you go.
Holidays are coming.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready for that?
Yeah. Why not? You got to have Christmas. It's good.
Are you cooking a turkey?
I have no idea. I have not even thought. I do not even have one scintilla. You have to understand, in male terms, Christmas is still approximately 150 years away. Because really, for men, Christmas, it's like it will be.
Yeah, because we have to do all the planning and all the work.
Because it will be the I would say that when the Christmas party season starts and you get to, it's like 11th, 12th of December, and you're like, holy crokino, do I need to order something? And like, what do the boys want and all that stuff?
Do you think that people can go from being an extrovert earlier in their life to being more of an introvert later in their life?
I think that different flowers bloom in different soils in different ways.
I think I'm becoming more of an introvert.
Were you really an extrovert?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I really wasn't.
I see you as a determined as a determined extrovert, that you are a person who has such a good attitude and such a good spirit, and also I notice as you interact with other people, you know that your kindness and your interest and attention to them is the right thing to do for your fellow human, right? Just as you would hope they would do for you.
Very Lutheran.
Very Lutheran. Exceedingly Lutheran. Mm-hmm. And you put that – as my old daddy used to say, bring your hindquarters – but he didn't say hindquarters – and your heart will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think introversion or extroversion is like that. You just got to keep doing it until – it works until it feels right. And I think I see you as basically a person who is an introvert, but you gamely put the smile
show
on.
Up.
You put the smile on, you suit up and you show up and you get out there and you do it. I think the way to measure whether you're really an introvert or an extrovert, at the end of a party or at the end of a long time doing stuff like when you guys do a book signing or when you do whatever and you've done that, at the end of it, I'm like – hey, who wants cheeseburgers? Da 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 da. Like I feel ba 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 ba, and you probably say,
"Give me a minute."
I'm going to roll into a ball, approximately the size of a baby armadillo, and I am going to go into this darkened room with a glass of wine and be quiet now. And please do not talk to me for a little bit
because
I need to
minute.
Recharge. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably right.
Yeah, because I'm like
– I do need to recharge, and I think that's that thing I'm having a hard time with the schedule. And then, you know, so many people come to New York for business, and then they send a note like the day or two before and like, hey, I'm in New York, and don't you love New York? And let's go get dinner. Let's go get drinks. And I'm
right.
Like – I want to see them because I'm friends, but I'm like I can't
– People that live in Orlando don't go to Disney World every day.
Right. Yeah. It's New York will – it's so fun, and there's so many things to do, and it's great.
There's so many different meets.
And
here.
There's so many events. I got to go to one tonight.
What are you doing?
It's the Media Law Research Center, I think. And they're doing an event where I'm going to be with Ari Fleischer,
okay.
Joe Lockhart,
okay.
And Mark McKinnon.
Oh, okay.
And interviewed by Katie Turr on stage at an event.
Okay.
But get this. The dinner starts at 7:30. The
program
starts at 8:30, and the email says, we promise to be done by 10. I'm like, 10?
Dana will have a little blanket that she will just pull up over herself in the seat.
If you come from the West and you're a early to bed kind of person, it's just hard to meet some of the professional obligations or to take advantage of them. Actually, it's an honor to be invited to sit with these colleagues of mine and talk about all the stuff that we do all day. But I am finding there's not enough time to recharge and to think. I got to have a moment.
And the other thing is now that you are in you're in a different chapter now because you're sort of on the other side of the prism, and you have to be thinking about when we do
how did this podcast become my therapy session? This is embarrassing. Every week we end up talking about poor little me.
Oh, fiddly dee. You're going through this astonishing and wonderful professional change. It's a sea change. You've got your own.
It's like a lot different.
It's hugely different. When we do debates, when the Fox News Channel hosts a debate,
right.
And they are the very best. Only the finest cuts of meat. We spend so much time on those questions, sanding and honing. You know, Bill Salmon is the guru. He is the ultimate. And testing it about all the different ways. Well, what if he said this? If he said that, what would you follow up in what way? Well, if he says this, it's going to tip him off that that's coming. So we should ask that question later. We sand and hone these things down to be perfect because we don't care that you have come with talking points because your talking points are available on your website. our viewers and the voters need to know the truth. We got to get at the issue. And so now you're in the position where as you craft your show that carries your name every day, you have these people that come in. Now, you don't have to go to the kind of degree that we do for a debate because you're not picking the president. But – well, maybe you will. But you go through these segments. You've got to have those kinds of questions in mind.
Yeah, because I really do want to advance the ball. I don't want to ask questions that everybody's already heard.
It's not unreasonable that in this new phase that you need more time to – block things out and do that. So I would just no is the most powerful word in the English language. It's a tough one to say, but it's the bee's knees.
And it's the N-O, not the K-N-O-W.
Oh, I'll give you another one. And I'm sorry for anybody who I've ever done this to that's hearing this for the first time. There's magic phrase, which is, I wish I could.
Oh, yeah, I wish I could. Oh, I love that one.
I wish I could. Why can't you? No. I wish I could.
But at least I'm being honest now when I say I actually can't.
Yeah.
That's different.
Okay.
That doesn't go for Tony Fratto, so whenever he's in town, I do want to see him.
There you go.
That doesn't apply to you, Fratto.
The Fratto exception.
Okay. Trivia. Question number one. Only two people in history have been both governor of New Jersey and a major party candidate for president. Can you name them?
Well, Woodrow Wilson is one.
Yes.
Both governor of New Jersey and a major party's nominee for president.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's a Democrat.
Well, yeah, obviously.
No. I'm just trying to think about the right time period. Who had been the governor of New Jersey and ran for president? I don't know.
General George B. McClelland.
Oh, really? Oh, is that really? Okay. All right. That's true. Okay. Quite so.
You're going to get this next one.
This one's
so easy.
All right.
Taking office on July 5th, 1776, who was the first governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia? I like how you can make eye contact with him.
I know.
He has two first names.
has two first names. First governor of Virginia, and was it Monroe? No, who was it?
Patrick Henry.
Oh, the founder of my alma mater. Give me liberty or give me death. And in
You'll
trivia,
never live it down.
And in trivia, Bonewald gave me death, not liberty.
Bonewald. So next week, on the Daily Briefing, when you're on Wednesdays, we're going to do a little preview of this. I got to figure out how to do it, but.
No, I think I'm excited about this. I think you and Boney Bones can come up with a nice teaser for America.
We will. Okay, well, I have to go do the five.
Can I have this?
No.
I can't have this?
It's my insurance bar, just in case I'm like dying.
That's so sad.
Well, Kimberly might have Kimberly's Food Court tonight. I sent her an idea.
Oh, yeah?
Did you see that thing, the keg of buttermilk ranch dressing that you can order?
I'm intrigued. I'm open to this.
Yeah. So I said this would be a good excuse to have chicken wings.
No, you didn't. You know, you have blue cheese with chicken wings.
Oh. Well, not from Wyoming.
You don't have ranch.
No, I mean, what? No, you can put ranch on it.
No, you have blue cheese with chicken wings. That's what that is.
Well, no, I know. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could put grape.
Oh, I guess I should have said carrots.
You could have put grape jelly on chicken wings. You could put anything you want on chicken wings, but to be correct, you have them.
But you're right.
With blue cheese
but
dressing.
But if blue cheese wasn't available, you would take ranch.
Yeah, I mean, I would take it.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I would do it, but I'm just saying it would be correct.
You're
going
to get the keg
cheese.
Of buttermilk ranch dressing.
Shots.
Okay. All right. That was fun. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a review. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.